Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeart Podcasts, and how the tech are ya? I've got a special episode today. I've got a fellow podcaster in the studio with me virtually, Ed Zitron, who has the Better Offline podcast. If y'all think that I cast a critical eye at the tech industry, strap in, because Ed, you know, I give him the business, but I've listened to your show and it's gloves off when you start.
I can't help myself. I have to, because everyone's angry at tech right now. Everyone is so angry. And I get emails about it saying, oh, you've really put into words how I feel. And I think it's just, I am naturally pissed off, I guess. just a natural fury, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm a Gen Xer, so I'm a little older, and I think the natural cynicism that I possess has sort of dulled me to the point where I'm angry, but I'm also tired.
So, you're used to being angry.
Yeah, I've been angry since the early
Reagan.
80s.
Yeah.
I mean, you grow up in that Cold War era, and you learn how to be angry, but I wanted to talk about your show and about its genesis and sort of the process of, you know, how you came about thinking about doing a podcast and the sort of things that specifically inspired you. I'd love to talk about the episode that published most recently as we record this, where you talked about the metaverse, because it's something that I share all the feelings that you express in that episode. I've talked about on this show as well, which is largely about how infuriating it is to have this ill-defined concept take over to an extent where you feel you're just screaming into the void. What are you doing? Why are you spending money? Why are these businesses jumping into it? But you can say the same thing about NFTs. You can say the same thing about AI.
And I did.
Yes. And you will continue to do so. But let's talk about that. Let's talk about sort of what your background is and then leading into the creation of the Better Offline podcast.
So in 2020, I was, as many people were, getting quite depressed. And it was because I wasn't writing as well as the world burning around us. So I thought, I'm going to start a newsletter. I had 200 subscribers, 300 maybe, and most of them, I'm pretty sure, were dead emails. But I started writing about tech stuff because I've been running a PR firm for about 12 years. Mm-hmm. And a tech PR firm specifically. So I've seen all these things up close. And then during 2020, I was writing a lot about return to office, and that felt like I was screaming into the void as well. People were saying from May, well, we've got to get back to the office, but no one could say why. And there were all these articles, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, talking about the office is better, and it was always talking to executives. And that really began to jokeify me a bit. I was like, I don't like this. And it was, and people were reading it, and people were responding really well. But I remember the thing that the first time it really took off was this thing called Clubhouse. Clubhouse was, I don't know if you remember, an app. So everyone in the tech industry was saying Clubhouse is the future. Clubhouse is the future. What Clubhouse was basically a live podcast show. It's Twitter Spaces. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. A live voice chat thing where any number of speakers can speak at the same time. And what happened was Andreessen Horowitz, major venture capital firm, and Marc Andreessen himself were really trying to push this through. They were pushing every tech person, every celebrity they knew to use this platform. And everyone was talking about it and saying, this is the future. And I couldn't tell how, because last time I checked, radio existed.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was talking about this thing, saying it's going to be worth billions. And there was allegedly a $4 billion offer. And I kept writing, just saying, this is vaporware. This isn't a thing. There was no revenue. There was no monetization strategy. There really wasn't a point to it. And also, tech people are frightfully boring. So hearing these ultra-rich buffoons going, oh, well, the innovation's very important. And they'd ramble on and on. It was dull, but people were flocking to it. And then one day they just stopped. Mm-hmm. They just stopped using it. And I did a few, like, aha moments where I was like, ah, gotcha. And then I got quoted in, like, Wired. And I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. But I kept writing because I enjoyed it. And also, I kind of see both sides. I see the business side, and I see the journalism side, and I was a games journalist before this. And so I just kept writing about this stuff, and I kept calling it as I see it, because it was an independent newsletter, and it went from 200 people to 4,000 to like 1,000 to 4,000 subscribers. It's 23,000 today.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became a big thing. And I don't know, I like writing a lot, and I can write very fast. I used to do 3 or 4 a week. I have no idea how I had that output. Now I just do once a week when I can make it. But I write in the way that I grew up reading and seeing on television in England. Mm-hmm. There was generally a more critical approach to journalism, but there was more opinion. And when the opinion ran, it wasn't really afraid of leaving a few black eyes as long as you punched up. You don't attack the people below. You attack the executives, the Sundar Pichais of the world, Google's Alphabet CEO, guy who makes $220 million a year and lays off thousands of people and drives Google search into the ground. These are things that people see and mm-hmm. people are angry about. And I think I'm good at putting that into words, for better words there, I guess.
Sure. It's such a valuable asset to have, because to your point in your various podcasts and hearing you talk in meetings and things, you know, we got a lot of quote unquote tech journalism that's not really journalism at all. It's essentially regurgitating press releases, which doesn't have any value to it. You could just go and read the press release if that's what you wanted to do. And it's only a few outlets that go any further than that. And I find them incredibly valuable. But unfortunately, those are like the exceptions rather than the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we could even talk about tech's effect on journalism and how that has played a huge part in this, in that it has devalued journalism to a large extent. There's the infamous pivot to video moment we could talk about. Like, there's so much that ends up being wrapped up in this. It becomes a lot of inside baseball for folks who work in the industry, but it's important to recognize, so that when I do something like advocate for critical thinking, people have those assets that they can go to that help train them on this, and not just throwing them into the deep end of the pool and saying, think critically and you'll be fine.
Yeah. What does thinking critical look like? Tech journalism as a whole has got more critical. On the broadcast side,
mm-hmm.
a lot of tech podcasts are very right-leaning right now. The two most successful ones, the All In podcast and Lex Fridman's. And Lex Fridman is a right wing. Mm-hmm. So is the All In guys.
Mm-hmm.
David Sacks is a pro-Russia goon. Jason Calacanis isn't much better. These guys are controlling the airwaves to some extent. But a lot of that is because a lot of the tech industry thinks that what media in tech should do is positive. It should be rah-rah, and we should only criticize a few things when we kind of feel like it, versus what people want, which is an explanation as to why things aren't working right. Mm-hmm. They want to understand the decisions that people are making. Something you've done very well is you've explained why things are the way they are, how things have got places. When Google was a search company versus an ads company.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know these things. There is a need for things like how your iPhone works. Rich DeMiro at KTLA, excellent guy, great radio host as well. He does very good, like, how to avoid scam stuff. That kind of journalism is extremely valuable. Steve Noviello in Houston on Fox, another great guy for this. That's very valuable. But otherwise, tech journalism is growing into an industry. It's growing into something that critiques things and says, here are what the powerful people are doing. But I don't think that there's enough just explaining why the world is the way it is. And showing the emotion, the anger you need to, because this stuff, Google search being worse, is horrifying. It's something that hits billions of people. You should be angry. You're angry. I'm angry. This should be front page news everywhere, except Google put out a thing saying, oh, we're going to fix search. We're going to make it better. And everyone's like, great, Google's good now. They're not. They haven't done anything.
Well, and if it were front page news, you'd never find it because you put it in Google search and it wouldn't come up.
Exactly, yeah. You get three different SEO spam sites.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because I can actually, I mean, obviously this isn't a new thing. I can see patterns of this kind of cycle where if you start asking questions and you start coming up with answers, you start to see kind of the cynical background that's fueling things within the tech industry. I'm reminded when I first started getting into tech podcasting, it was in 2008. 2008 was around the time where all the different television manufacturing companies were all pushing 3D televisions. And you started to ask the question, why? Why are you pushing 3D TV? And if you started coming up with answers, well, one, you've got the various studios out there that are really keen on the idea of creating a format that is very difficult to pirate. And so therefore, they have an incentive to push the 3D technology. And then you've got the manufacturers who they need to come up with ways to differentiate this year's models from last year's models. It's not just good enough to come out with another TV that does what last year's TV does. And you can't just constantly push resolution year over year. So there were all these very cynical reasons for it. And ultimately the response from consumers was, I just don't want this.
But that's a fascinating one, though, because I remember that 2008 was actually when I moved to America and I moved into the tech industry. And the other thing that you're completely right about is you'll notice you didn't mention the filmmakers. Mm-hmm. The filmmakers were just like, I don't want to do this. This doesn't sound like it will make the movie better unless I'm making Shrek. Shrek was one of the few, the Minions movies, I think much later, obviously.
Yeah.
But that was really one of those times where I don't think I saw it at the time quite as clearly as you did, but you're right. That was one of those times where it's like this, something is being done to consumers rather than for them.
Yeah. They were trying to pull a Steve Jobs, who was obviously brilliant at convincing people they needed something that
horrible guy, though.
Listen, we're not going to talk about getting Jobsed on this podcast because that was a thing at Apple.
I know.
Yeah, but we probably know people who got Jobsed at one point. That was when you would walk in and Steve Jobs would fire you on the spot for some minor thing. Anyway, what he was really good at was convincing people that they wanted a product or that a product that he had on offer was going to solve a problem they didn't even know they had before. And partly why he was able to create entirely new markets. I don't want to discount all the other people who also put in a huge amount of work.
Sure.
You know, Johnny Ives and all that kind of stuff. But the industry was trying to copy what he was able to do, and they just weren't able to achieve it. They were not able to convince the market that 3D television was really a valuable thing. There was the issue that there wasn't that much content in the beginning to really grab people.
There still isn't. Apple on the Vision Pro is still trying to convince you to get 3D content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I mean, when you look at some of the ones that came out, like there were a few obvious standouts that showed spectacle and how spectacle could be effective. I mean, Avatar is, it's impossible to argue. Like it was the top grossing film of all time, and in part was because of the spectacle of this three-dimensional filmmaking approach. But then you had things like the Hobbit series, which certainly did not capture imaginations the same way Avatar did, despite the fact that it was 3D and 48 frames per second filmmaking, pushing the envelope, saying this is the future of film. And people said, yeah, can we make it not that? Because I don't like the Hobbits looking like they're acting in a Mexican soap opera. It's just not appealing to me.
But also just no one wanted it. No one was sitting there being like, I wish this movie was more in front of me.
Right. Or that it was three times longer than it needed to be.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. We won't go. So I also have a Lord of the Rings tattoo, so I'm not even going to go into my disdain for the Hobbit films. But that to me is an example of sort of the things that are going on behind the scenes that you may not necessarily be aware of as a consumer or just, you know, part of the mainstream public. And that's why I find podcasts like Better Offline really valuable, because what you're doing is you're asking the questions and peeling back the layers and saying, not only does this thing not make sense, but you need to understand the motivations behind why it's a thing in the first place and why you should question it and why you might feel uneasy toward it. Like, I think to NFTs as being a great example of the thing that everyone who was already invested in the crypto world were desperate to convince you this is a valuable thing, enough so that companies were jumping in without really understanding what NFTs were. I think most companies still don't understand what NFTs are. And everyone was getting that feeling of, am I actually missing out? Is this going to be a case of not investing early on and I'm going to miss out on a huge opportunity? And of course, we saw the bottom drop out of NFTs at the end of that year, and it hasn't recovered since, which suggests that the people who were skeptical and expressing caution were right all along. That to me is where the value for a show like Better Offline really comes in, because it teaches you to ask those questions yourself, even if you haven't done an episode about that specific topic yet.
And a lot of it is as well that people are a lot smarter than they think they are with this stuff. And I think the tech industry has done, and the marketers especially, have done a really good job making people feel that they won't understand. That there are algorithms and powers at play that you just simply could not understand. You don't understand NFTs, and that's why you will have fun staying poor, or crypto, the same deal. When ultimately with crypto, they claim to be making decentralized software and they weren't. The software does not work. None of it is good. Axie Infinity is allegedly like a Pokemon clone. It costs like $1,000 just to start. And by the way, it's a terrible game. It's not good. Made a lot of guys rich, though.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. When people understand the incentives and the actual basic things, I think a lot of people can understand tech way more. And you know this. You've been doing this podcast for a long time. People are way more aware of this stuff. But there is almost a deliberate obfuscation at times. And I find it reprehensible. I find it very annoying. And the reason the Metaverse episode got me so angry was I remember everyone trying to explain to me, hey, Ed, virtual worlds are the future. And I looked them dead in the eye and said, I was literally like the second guy in England who wrote about massively multiplayer online RPGs. I know these things, and I've known them for a long time. I played Meridian 59. I know this crap. I played Ultima Online. I know this stuff. What you are describing is the stuff that I was playing on a PCMIA card. So please tell me how this is different. And they couldn't. It was a big lie. And I think everyone saw it at the time, but the media fell for it. There were so many. There were Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Time Magazine, all of these places saying, the metaverse is here. The metaverse is here, everyone. And it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, and it was reminding me, if you go back a decade, of discussions of the semantic web. The semantic web.
Oh, God. I haven't thought about the semantic web in forever.
I know, but it's essentially, I mean, it has a lot of the same groundwork as the metaverse does, right? It doesn't necessarily incorporate a virtual world, but then arguably neither does the metaverse, because the word doesn't mean anything. So like the metaverse could involve a virtual world, or you could be talking about something entirely different. It all depends upon how.
When I saw Microsoft Teams referring to itself as metaverse, that was when I was like, nope, that's enough.
It's not just frustrating. It's destructive when you see enterprises jump in on these trending ideas that are not fully baked and convincing people, whether it's employees or partners or investors, that this is the future, when clearly no one has a really firm grip on what they're even talking about. And it's such a massive waste of resources. And when you sit there, when you see when tech works well, when tech is doing its job and actually making things easier or better, and you sit there and think, what if we took all that wasted time and effort and we had actually dedicated it to enterprises that could benefit people, where would we be now? Like, those are the questions that get me angry. I still rant about it.
And a lot of it comes down to something called the rot economy, where we are in a world where companies are evaluated in the public markets and at times the private markets based on growth, not based on what they produce, whether they have happy customers, whether they are making a sustainable income, whether they could do the same thing for another 3 years and they'd be fine. No, you must grow 10, 20% a year, which is why Microsoft jumped on the metaverse wagon. Disney, same deal. And then dropped them the moment things look bad. And hey, you know who also dropped the metaverse? Meta. They also moved it. They went from in 2022 talk about the metaverse being the most important thing to 2023 being the year of efficiency. And the AI was where Boz and Zuck were now facing themselves. And he'll still claim that the metaverse is around, but it's just that is a symptom of an economy that doesn't build technology for people, but builds technology to sell to investors. And that's where we're going right now. And that's the scary thing.
Yeah.
Tech can be great. And a big thing with Better Off On I'm trying not to do is not to be just endlessly cynical. I'm angry and you should be angry. But I don't hate tech.
Mm-hmm.
I hate some people in tech. I find Mark Zuckerberg truly disgusting. Same with Steve Jobs. Same with Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
All of like these people are not working for people. They are working for investors and themselves. And Steve Jobs was an evil cretin. Listen to Behind the Bastards if you want to know more. But at the very least, he made stuff for people. He had an inherent sense of like, this feels good in the hand. This UI UX situation is satisfying. They can now do this and that will make me lots of money. He was good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Cook less so. Mm-hmm. He's better and he's better than a lot of the rest of them. But like Sundar Pichai, he doesn't give a rat's ass about any of this. He wants to see Google grow. It was 223 million in 2022, 280 in 2021, year off of the pandemic, millions of people dying, and he becomes one of the richest guys. Really, really sad, especially because Google search has got so bad.
Yes.
It's not even, and it's not, and I think the big difference is it no longer feels like a fair trade. We're no longer in a situation where they're making cool stuff and we're okay with them getting rich doing so because they're making bad stuff and getting richer.
And getting richer. Ed and I will be back to rant a lot more, but first let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Google in particular is a tricky topic simply because even in its good years, it was a company that seemed like it was throw anything at the wall and hope that things stick. And even if things stuck, you weren't guaranteed to have that product last for more than a few years before Google would either discontinue it or, you know, cannibalize it for parts and put it into other existing Google features. Like I talked recently about Google Wave, a product that was
Oh, Google Wave.
Good for maybe two people, and it was me and my co-host.
Because it was so cool, but it was useless.
It was useless, except we would use it to literally build run of show for a live streaming show we did once a week. And for that, it was perfect. And I said, I literally can't think of another use case for this particular tool.
But here's the thing. Imagine if they'd have built Discord instead, which is basically MIRC, which is a 20, 30-year-old piece of free software.
Yeah. So even in Google's, you know, heyday, when the don't be evil was still at least nodded to, it was a tricky place, but at least you felt like they were sincere. I felt that it was a lot of engineers building tools for other engineers, not necessarily for the general public. If you weren't an engineer, it wasn't nearly user friendly enough, but I felt like they believed in what they did. I don't necessarily feel that today, largely for the same reasons you've mentioned.
Well, there's a big thing that happened in 2019, 2020. Ben Gomes, who was the head of Google Search at the time, there was an event at Google called Code Yellow, where basically they realized that search had a problem. And he put out an alert, a warning saying the Google Ads site is getting too close to search. They keep trying to mess with it. Mm-hmm. 2020, Prabhakar Raghavan takes over his former job, head of ads at Google. That's what happened, folks.
So it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's not a problem, it's a goal.
And what was funny was at the time, Prabhakar was like, oh yeah, Gump's doing a great job with search. Great job, man. Zip. Now Google search sucks so bad.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's the emails I get about the Rot Economy episode where it's like, thank you for saying that. I've been confused this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
These things feel very obvious to those of us who are extremely online, who are doused in this every day. But I don't think most people realize, because there's so much happening. And to your point earlier, Google News is not particularly useful.
Mm-hmm.
News is not something that's very well spread these days.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, well, I'm not going to open up the can of worms because I totally could, but this is, it's making me want to start talking about things like recommendation algorithms and the evils they present. But I've done tons of episodes about that.
You've done a lot there.
Yeah. I don't need to retread that ground, but there are big problems that I think need to be recognized and addressed. I don't know what the solutions are, because when I look at the issues of you're running a company specifically to keep shareholders happy, right? Rather than to see any other corporate mission through, that to me has its roots deep in the 1980s, like the era I grew up in.
Yeah.
Like that's where that kind of really started to take hold. Thanks to like people like Jack Welch and stuff in areas outside of tech. But the tech industry seems to have really taken that ball and run with it.
They're rewarded for it. They're rewarded for it by the markets. Growth at all costs is very profitable.
It's what makes me have to ask questions too, that even when I'm hearing things that on the surface sound beneficial or benign, I start asking questions, and then it turns out there's a darker side to it. So for example, OpenAI and the push for regulations in AI, like that sounds great. You know, the idea of, oh, we have a dominant company in generative AI that's advocating for the purposes of creating regulations, rules for AI. That sounds like that's good. Like that seems like that's within the actual mission statement of the original OpenAI, which was presumably created to make responsible artificial intelligence implementations and avoid all the pitfalls that we worry about, whether it's,
except you were basically letting a murderer at that point dictate his own sentence.
Yes. You're letting the person who would most benefit from making the rules make the rules, right? Which could very well mean that, oh, well, let's make rules so that it suppresses anyone else who's getting into the AI game, giving us an even greater advantage in the market than we already have, while impacting us the bare minimum amount. And it starts sounding like you're getting into fringe theories, but that's really what's going on. It's really, it's really the truth that you're talking about people who they have such a huge stake in the game. And I think that kind of applies to pretty much everything we've talked about. They have such a huge stake. That's the full incentive for them to do this. It may sound on the surface to be like this very kind of gracious approach, but in reality, it's very self-serving.
Well, it's kind of like the entire OpenAI nonprofit side that when Sam Altman was ousted, was proven to be completely ineffectual.
Mm-hmm.
People should be really angry about that. What happened there was Sam Altman was kicked out for reasons we still do not know. Mm-hmm. We really do not know. That's never come out. However, what happened was pressure from venture capitalists and Microsoft, a $3 trillion tech firm, was used to put him back in. The pressure was done. Yeah. That is one of the darker things I've seen happen in the tech industry. And I saw journalists saying, this is beautiful. That scared me. That scared me more than anything I've seen in this industry.
Yeah. Ever. When you see that the other people who are on the board were members of the co-founding group that came up with the idea of OpenAI in the first place.
And the people on the board were replaced by Larry Summers.
Yeah.
You want some Gen X cynicism there?
Yeah.
Larry bloody Summers. Adam D'Angelo, the co-founder of Quora, he's still on the board. Quora is currently full of OpenAI stuff, ruining the platform. Mm-hmm. People don't realize this is the stuff that matters.
Mm-hmm.
These moments are the things to be angry about.
Right. And when people like the members of the former board are trying to take action in order to get back on the track that was originally intended when they were first forming OpenAI, you know, what they get for their efforts is this huge backlash that was exacerbated by the media coverage of it, and then forced to not only reinstate Altman, but to step down as well, right? Like, you had co-founders having to step down.
And replaced with Larry goddamn Summers. And what, one of the Salesforce guys? Just like replace them with Darth Vader. Just go the whole way. Replace them with David Petraeus. Why not? Just go the whole damn way. Colin Powell. I'm sure they considered Condoleezza Rice.
Mm.
So they now have something in common with the Cleveland Browns.
This is totally off topic, but I'm reminded of the time I'm a huge fan of the Disney parks because I went to them as a kid. So even as an adult, while I recognize the shortcomings of the Disney company, the parks have a special place in nostalgia in my heart. Sure. It's not that different from today, honestly, but this happened, you know, back in the 90s. There was a time period where Disney had replaced the executive level of leadership for the Disney parks with retail leaders. So people from the Banana Republic and Gap. And that was a time where they started to do things like gut all the stuff that gave character to the Disney parks and replace them with stores, and to take out some of the other attractions and to put in like quick service food carts because they were much higher profit margins.
Right.
And like, they were running it like they were running a retail business. And it started to take away a lot of the charm that had been there in the parks. And to me, like, I recognize a lot of that same sort of stuff going on in the tech world in general. Like, even tools that maybe once upon a time you liked, a lot of the sheen has worn off.
Well, I mean, Google is more profitable than ever.
Yeah.
Same with Meta. Like, these companies are so much worse. The products are so much worse, but they're more profitable than ever.
Yeah. When you're thinking about Google, I also think about YouTube. I think about how incredibly successful YouTube is. And I think about all the creators on YouTube and how at the mercy of YouTube they are. Like, if there's any change in YouTube at all, it has a disproportionate effect on the people who are creating the content there. And you could have someone who has really good content and genuinely has a good voice and something to say and good production values, and they could be absolutely devastated by a change in YouTube's algorithms, or be completely laid waste when there's unsubstantial copyright claims put against them. Like, the platform can be weaponized, and so it has been weaponized. I look at that, and meanwhile, you have at the company level a company that continues to just benefit financially larger amounts year over year over year.
Yes, and by making the product more annoying to use so that people spend more time on it. I mean, it's frustrating as well, because the fair question is, what do we do here?
Yeah.
And the answer genuinely is things like 404 Media, independent group of former Vice and Motherboard people like Jason Kobler, Emmanuel Mildberg, fantastic, Samantha Lee Cole as well. They did a really great story about a research thing that showed that Google results were getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that awareness of these issues will put pressure on these companies. I know I'm just running a podcast, really, but I believe that more people being aware of these things means that more things will change. These companies have gotten away with it because they've obfuscated the value proposition and the way they're making their money. Now that that's changing, I actually believe that they may start pulling these things back. It will take time.
I have some optimism, largely because I have seen activism and organization and unionizing starting to grow, especially in the tech industry over the last couple of years, which was unheard of a few years ago.
Yeah, unions will also break the back of these companies, which is why they're so scared of them.
Yes. And it's why they're challenging the National Labor Relations Board and whether or not it's constitutional.
Disgraceful.
I know, right?
So disgusting.
I'm not going to go into it because I'll start screaming into the microphone. Support your unions, guys.
Please do.
But yeah, like seeing that has given me a lot of hope because it tells me that there has finally reached a point where you can't just sit back and not be active and not support your fellow workers and to actually call out these companies when they are doing things that are harmful for everyone other than the executives and the shareholders. And I think that is promising. It's not a guarantee that we're going to turn the corner and enter into, you know, the idyllic version of the future that Gene Roddenberry had when he made Star Trek. I don't think that we're like on that doorstep. But I find solace in seeing that movement grow in various sectors of the tech industry. And my hope is to continue to see that grow and to continue seeing people educate themselves, as you've said, and to advocate for those changes, because ultimately it does benefit the largest amount of people. The people it doesn't benefit would be, again, the executive team, the C-suites, and the shareholders. But honestly, I think they can afford to
they will be
take
fine.
A step back. Yeah.
You'll make $50 million a year. Hell, you'll probably make $100 million a year. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. Make good stuff again.
Yeah. And in the long term, you'll actually be better. I'm not done being angry at the tech industry just yet, but I do have to take a break to thank our sponsors. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So there's an online media company that I was a fan of for a very long time called Rooster Teeth. And Warner Brothers Discovery announced yesterday they're shutting it down. So after 21 years, almost 21 years, the company Rooster Teeth is getting shut down. More than 150 people are losing their jobs as a result of that. I plan on doing a full episode kind of giving a history of that company and its impact on internet culture. But I look at things like that, and I think that's why it's really important to organize, to have unions, to have the ability to advocate. Because the problems of Rooster Teeth, it's more than just Warner Brothers making a decision, a unilateral decision to shut them down. It's not just David Zaslav wants to save money. It's also that there were a lot of bad decisions made over the last decade that have hurt that company in the long run. And if you have things like unions, you can help mitigate that. If you have people who passionately believe in what they are doing, and it's not just how can we make number go up, I think that you see a much healthier ecosystem for all involved. And I'm so tired of watching companies sacrifice things to get short-term gains and then suffer in the long term. It's exhausting.
And that is the rot economy. It is the growth at all costs economy. It is a frustrating business. And the only way to fight it is awareness. Because we cannot as people, but like you said, labor organization will do it too.
Yeah.
Worker-owned businesses like Defector, like 404 Media, like Aftermath, they are going to fight this. They're going to fight the people like Corey Haik, who ran Vice into the ground. These people have names.
Yeah.
And they should be said out loud on podcasts and in the media. The yeah. people that are responsible, David Zaslav, Warner Brothers Discovery, he is responsible for so many great things not happening, like Coyote versus Acme,
yeah,
for example.
Yeah.
Batwoman, like, he just literally killing media.
So, full disclosure, the company I worked for when I started this podcast was HowStuffWorks.com, which at one point was part of Discovery Communications. So, as I've said on this podcast a few times, I am well aware of how David Zaslav operates because I got to see it up close and personal. And I can't say that anything that's happened over the last 2 years has surprised me. I felt discouraged. I mean, as a fan of those properties, I really would have liked the chance to see them. And it's a shame that for a tax write-off, it means that they can never see the light of day. It's not just, oh, it's on the shelf. No, it's going to be like obliterated from the earth.
For no reason.
Yeah. Tax write-off. That's it.
But also, do you need that tax write-off?
Whether they need it or not, like when you see someone who's in control of a company that makes content seemingly have no passion for content at all, it's just heartbreaking.
And this is the problem behind a lot of the problems of capitalism right now, mm-hmm. that the people running things are not making things for people.
Yeah.
They are making things for the markets. They're making things for algorithms. They're making things because they saw something on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to appeal to an algorithm or a market. And it's disgraceful because this kind of works until it doesn't. And when it stops working, it's calamitous.
Yeah.
Look at what happened to Disney with the streaming, the massive overinvestment in mm-hmm. streaming. Things like that are a result of this disconnection.
And to your point, it ends up affecting, like when I was talking about Rooster Teeth, it ends up affecting so many people who end up without a job at the end of it when it ultimately collapses in on itself. We saw the same thing when the pandemic hit and you had all these tech companies invest in their infrastructure, which made sense at the time, seemingly. But then once the pandemic starts to recede, they realize, oh, we now have this huge investment in infrastructure that's no longer necessary. It's now we could view it as a cost as opposed to an asset. Let's downsize. It's just such a massive waste. And so many talented people end up being jerked around.
The CEO should be fired.
Yeah.
But they're not.
Well, and I've heard plenty of people argue about when they talk about AI, not generative AI, but AI potentially replacing jobs. Like, why aren't we looking at the C-suite for that? Because
that's
it seems
what
to
I
be.
Wrote. I wrote a Business Insider piece on this very subject, and people were very mad at it. People did not like that idea. Most of them CEOs. Most of them were like, hey, whoa, I got a sweet gig here.
Yeah, I could see why they would be mad at the same reason why I get mad when I hear a CEO suggest that 8,000 jobs could be held off from being filled by humans because we can just fill them with AI in the future.
Here's a funny one for you. So Reddit laid off, 90 people just before their IPO. Mm-hmm. You know how much Steve Huffman made in 2023?
How much?
Over $190 million. Actually, I want to confirm that number.
That's a lot of cheddar.
Well, it was a combination, like all these things between stock options and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. His total compensation exceeded $193 million in 2023.
Yeah.
And Reddit is getting worse. He made, and he has not paid a single person who actually dedicated themselves to building Reddit. That's the thing.
Yeah.
These people better hope that there is not actually a revolution. Their faces are all over the internet.
I mean, you know, it's funny because every year I feel like we're just a little step closer. Well, this has been a great conversation.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'm ready now to go out and start swinging. So
hell yeah.
I want to again remind all my listeners, Better Offline is the podcast. It's live now. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. You absolutely should check it out and take a listen.
BetterOffline.com. It has all the links.
All the links. Go there. Check out the newsletter, too. Again, being informed is your best weapon when it comes to these sorts of things. And, you know, otherwise you're just going to be left asking, why is nothing as good as I remember it being? You know? Like, there are reasons why I'm not on, well, what is now X, but used to be Twitter. Like, for a while, it was great. I loved it. It was a fantastic
way. I have made my business, made friends, fallen in love on there. And now it's going to the dogs.
Yeah. I remember getting opportunities to do things that I never would have done had I not been on a platform like that. But yeah, it just got so useless so quickly that I couldn't justify staying there anymore. I have friends who still use it as a way of promoting stuff, but I just found it far too depressing, honestly, to be active on the platform. And for my own mental health, I stepped back. I was like, you know what? I did build an audience, but honestly, I don't even know how many of those people are still active on this platform because that's how bad it got. So definitely check out all those links. And Ed, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.